right to keep and bear arms should be applied to the states using the Privileges or Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment. And that's a key term to keep in mind, that it should be applied to the states, and that what we're applying is the right to keep and bear arms. It's not a matter of incorporating, and the Second Amendment in and of itself isn't precisely what's at issue here. And this is because the whole idea of incorporation, that word, is a constitutional malapropism. The ratifiers of the 14th Amendment and its framers would not have recognized that term because they didn't think of what they were doing as simply taking the first eight amendments of the Bill of Rights and applying them as against state action. What they were doing was using the Privileges or Immunities Clause, as well as due process and equal protection, to provide a series of protections for individual rights against state violation in the Reconstruction era. Now, the Civil War effected a fundamental rethink, a change in our constitutional structures and in the relationship between the federal government and the states, and the federal and state governments, respectively, and individuals. All of a sudden, with the Reconstruction-era amendments, no longer would state infringement on people's rights be tolerated. Remember, at the founding, the big concern was preventing and forestalling federal government violations of individual rights. And so here we have the Privileges or Immunities Clause, which, by all historical indications, refers to the natural rights that all people have, as defined in the political theory that we're well aware of from the founding, and then updated through the first half of the 19th century, as well as certain civil and political rights. And in that group of privileges or immunities, it's undisputed that the right to keep and bear arms plays a part. Indeed, one of the largest motivating factors behind the ratification of the 14th Amendment and its promulgation in the first place was to counteract the oppression of freed slaves and unionists in the southern and border states. One of the first things that after the Civil War that was taking place was the disarmament of these people. And indeed, that started to happen again when the Reconstruction-era government started to fade and we had the period of redemption later in the 18th century. And now, the second issue, though, is that the Privileges or Immunities Clause is the better vehicle than the Due Process Clause. So what I've been discussing up to now is with regards to incorporation being a misnomer, but also this expansive idea of substantive due process is a misnomer that was simply created when the Supreme Court strangled the Privileges or Immunities Clause in its crib in the 1873 Slaughterhouse cases, 5 years after the ratification of the 14th Amendment. If it wasn't for Slaughterhouse, then much of the substantive due process jurisprudence that we would have seen, many of the rights that were being discussed in that jurisprudence would have come through privileges or immunities, and it would have been a much more faithful tie to the actual text, structure, and history of the Constitution. So here in McDonald versus Chicago, the Supreme Court has an opportunity to bring us back to the original public meaning of the 14th Amendment and the proper relationship between the respective protections that the Privileges or Immunities Clause and the Due Process Clause was meant to provide to individual rights.